Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
So, Jason, was the top story of this show the fly bugging Shelton Benjamin, or the absence of the Firefly Funhouse? Like, what was the top story coming out of what was one of the more highly anticipated episodes of SmackDown in a while?
I think the top story is that it was just more of the same, and they seemed to be extra motivated from Monday Night Raw, and they forgot that they had a Tuesday night show to follow up with. And also, again, you mentioned Shelton Benjamin. I'm not sure if he had a stroke. I'm not sure exactly what happened here on the show tonight. Hopefully he's okay. That was very bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, Eric Bischoff on his podcast talked about this being a huge deal. He said it's a bigger opportunity than running WCW. He said it's not maybe. This is the biggest opportunity I've ever had in this industry. And again, I mean, it's, our job is to review SmackDown, and it just ended. I don't want to blow it out of proportion because we can this is a long road. Eric is saying he and his wife are going to move to Stamford, something he said he would never do. He said he would never when he worked for WWE, and I think it was in the interview with me back 10 years ago, he had said, I will never join creative and I'll never move to Stamford. And he's doing both, apparently. And so if it's a long-term thing, you know, we don't want to draw too much into the fact that it didn't revolutionize the show with 4 or 5 days notice. But man, if you didn't read that, if you didn't know about that news, there's nothing about this show that would have made you think there was any change.
No, not at all. It just seemed like a pretty status quo episode of SmackDown. And yeah, there were parts of it that I enjoyed.
Yeah, it was fine.
Yeah, I mean, there were parts of it also where they like in the main event with Heavy Machinery, where they kind of put over the new act and they're trying to get some of the newer faces over. So it wasn't as though it was a complete waste of time. There was just nothing to get overly excited about. And I knew that from the minute the show went on the air with our good friend Shane McMahon. I kind of took that as a kind of an omen of things to come.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this Heyman and Bischoff story, but boy, they didn't give us a lot to work with tonight as far as that goes. But let's set the table, introduce ourselves, and get rolling on the color portion of the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show following the Tuesday, July 2nd, 2019 edition of WWE SmackDown, the first episode with Eric Bischoff as executive director, I assume. Maybe there was news before the show that hasn't gotten out yet, because like I said, very typical show. My co-host today is Jason Solomon from the Solomonster Sounds Off podcast. Jason, welcome back to the show.
Happy to be here. You know, my question to you would be, you know, what's your understanding of this situation? I've heard a lot of conflicting things that Bischoff was going to be backstage tonight. I know Heyman apparently last night was sort of a guerrilla position with Vince McMahon, and maybe you could kind of watch the show and get a sense that his fingerprints were all over it. I didn't get that read at all from SmackDown tonight. So what's your sense? I mean, is it a case where we really can't expect any sort of influence from the so-called Bischoff era until after the pay-per-view? Or do we have to give it a few weeks? Or was tonight supposed to be the big sort of kickoff of the Bischoff era of SmackDown?
Yeah, there honestly hasn't been a lot of information about it. There was the WWE press release, their website story, and then I got reaction from talking to people off record, behind the scenes, wrestlers and others in the company, and some feedback from people who used to work there, just kind of getting their take on things. But everybody was just waiting. You know, the wrestlers were not told more than us. They found out on Monday when they showed up that, oh, there's Paul. You know, be ready for a longer, you know, meeting, you know, things after the show take a little longer with him, cause he's more thorough and that kind of thing. And, you know, I got word he was on a headset sent next to Vince McMahon, and everybody seemed to think it was a positive thing to have Paul there, cause he's built up rapport backstage over the past, you know, half year or so, especially as his role has increased. With Bischoff, people were more nervous. There's people who never worked with Bischoff, who have heard bad things about him or controversial things about him, or just that he's not a particularly creative person. Like, that's not his thing to be a booker. So everybody was just taking a wait and see attitude. And I have not heard yet if what Eric's role was at the show. how prominent it was or anything like that. So that's news hopefully we'll have by the Thursday flagship over on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast feed. Maybe we'll get some word on that as we're recording tonight and streaming live tonight. So we'll see. I mean, the way Eric is talking, he's moving to Stamford. This feels like more than a it's certainly more than a PR move or a you know, wallpaper. You know, it does seem like Vince either wants a fall guy or wants genuine help. There's some speculation this is a shot in the dark to see if Paul or Eric can work out, but it also buys him time no matter what the ratings are, because he can tell anybody, investors, Fox or whatever, well, we try, you know, we're being proactive. We tried change. I brought in some proven names, frankly, or notwithstanding whatever word he'd use that he uses, notwithstanding such efforts, it turned out that, you know, one of the two was not keeping up on things the way that I had hoped. And so I'm taking over control, but things will be fine in October. I don't know. So, I mean, it really is a wait and see attitude. And I think everybody had that feeling coming into today.
Yeah, it just kind of had the feel for me of sort of killing time, you know, until the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And they certainly moved some stories forward as far as Extreme Rules is concerned. Again, like I said before, I don't want to say that there wasn't any kind of storyline advancement on the show. It just did not have the same kind of spark that certainly that Raw had when it came on the air last night. I think it sort of tapered off in the second hour last night. But this week was just sort of business as usual as far as SmackDown goes.
Very much, yeah. I was thinking at the end, you know, Kevin Owens kicking the bottom rope and throwing a fit, attacking Ziggler after taking the pin against Heavy Machinery. That felt like it might have been SmackDown's version of AJ Styles' heel turn, where it's sort of this week was the final straw for KO to maybe get serious. They might try to elevate him to a more serious level. I could be reading too much into it too. It might just be how KO reacted to losing, and it's no big deal. But it came across to me like maybe they were trying to hit the reset button a little bit on KO like they did with Styles. What's your take, Jason?
Yeah, that was my sense of it also. I mean, my understanding is that when he initially came back, the original plan had been for him to challenge Bryan for the championship at WrestleMania. And we started to see those vignettes on television positioning him as more of a babyface. You know, they were positioning him as the everyman. And he was eating pizza and going bowling with his kids and doing all the things, I guess, that poor schmoes like you and I would do. And that seemed to be the direction they were going in. And then Kofi got hot, and it was all about Kofi Mania. And Owens, he didn't even have a match at WrestleMania. So he sort of got screwed out of whatever, you know, plan there was for him and just ended up as a heel. He was just sort of same Kevin Owens we saw from the time before he came back from injury.
Yep.
It seemed to me like a bit of a reset tonight, where clearly from the opening segment and then again at the end with the stunner, that they're positioning him as a babyface again. And we may get a completely different direction from him. It screamed that to me just by kind of teaming him up with Ziggler and not having any interaction with him and Sami Zayn, who clearly is not a babyface, that they're going in a totally different direction with Kevin Owens.
And I'm fine with that. I agree that's what this seemed like. I also have I am a little nervous to draw strong conclusions that was a babyface turn because of the way WWE can sometimes not just change their mind, but sometimes indicate something. It seems obvious to us watching, but that's not what they meant. And I think there's some room for that this could actually be, you know, Kevin turning more heel and Ziggler supposed to be the sympathetic one because KO was a sore loser. But I don't think so. I'm with you on that. But I need to see more before I'm 100% sure.
Yeah, and again, if that was the direction they were going in, I think that would be a huge mistake. You know, all due respect to Ziggler, I mean, he's just sort of a dead act on this show. If they're going to put their muscle behind anybody and really give them like a big sort of push in a babyface role, I think it should be Kevin Owens. It's not a role that we're familiar with seeing him in. It would be unique because he's been a heel for so long and he's just been so easily hateable. Ziggler to me just feels like old hat. You know, he's in a tough spot right now because he's a talented guy, but I don't know what you do with him because people don't see any upward mobility with him. He's sort of a warm body. I feel like coming out of the Kofi feud, that's exactly what he was at the Saudi Arabia show, the last pay-per-view. I was shocked to see him come out in the opening segment because I kind of thought that he would disappear for a while. And it seems like he's going to stick around and that's fine. But as far as him being positioned in a sympathetic role, I don't see it. I think it's sort of been there, done that. People are over it, and they would be more apt to get behind Owens than they would behind Ziggler.
He had a funny quote when he was talking about, you know, Ziggler droning on and on, and he talked about how Ziggler at one point was what was a phrase he used? He said, "Yeah, it should have been you. It should have been you. It kind of was, then it wasn't, and it's not going to be again."
Yeah.
And everyone's thinking at that time, you know, the concussion kind of derailed him. And if you followed his career, it sort of was for like, you know, 6 days or something.
Well,
and then
you know, yeah. And, you know, it's pretty sad, actually. And I've even talked about this on my show because I get a lot of questions about Ziggler. And, you know, is there going to be hope for him in the future to get a big push or anything like that? And the line that Owens used tonight, he mentioned it's been like 8.5 years was your time. And I thought about that. And I said, you know, 8 years ago, you can make the argument, yeah, that he had momentum and the fans were ready to get behind him. And then you could also make the argument that 5 years ago or 6 years ago, it seems like there's been many different times where the crowd was ready to really get behind Ziggler. And I always think back to that Survivor Series where he was, I think, the sole survivor when Sting made his debut. And they had Ziggler as the sole survivor at the end of the match, and he pinned Seth Rollins. And I thought to myself, wow, this could be a real chance for them to finally, you know, take Ziggler and see how far they can go with him. And then they just completely dropped the ball and abandoned ship. And it just seemed like all the start and stop pushes. At some point, fans just – it's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. You can only do that so many times before people just stop caring.
Yep.
Me personally, I hate to say it, I'm long past the point of caring when it comes to Dolph Ziggler.
If he yells loud enough, do you think you'll care again?
Yeah, he could yell as loud as he wants to. You know, when I saw him doing all those promos in the build-up to the Saudi Arabia show, I heard some people say, oh, this is great. You know, these are great promos and everything. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, the passion is there, but it just felt to me like, I don't know, overacting. I just couldn't, it sounded like whining more than anything else.
He does seem like he's auditioning for, you know, the community play constantly. It's just, you know, under the spotlight with a acting coach egging him on to be more dramatic, you know.
Him and Lacey Evans both would fit in perfectly to community theater. But that's the way it came off to me. So I feel like with him, the ship has sailed. Kevin Owens in a babyface role, it's something different. And he's using the stunner, which is sort of a babyface finish. And so I think it fits, and let's see, you know, let's see how far they can go with it.
I agree. All right, let's bring our callers into the mix. If you want to get in line on the phone banks, the number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. You can stream our shows live after Raw and SmackDown. We start 3 to 5 minutes roughly after the shows go off the air. There's a direct link to the stream at pwtorch.com. In my Raw report on Monday nights and my SmackDown report on Tuesday nights. You can also follow us on Twitter at PWTorch and look for the tweet that has the link to our live stream. If you want to listen to the caller portion of the show live, you can download the full show with our on-site correspondent and mailbag later on, as most of you know, because you have done that in order to be listening to me now. Let's go to the phone banks and begin with area code 708 and then 801 on deck. 708, thanks for being up first. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Gentlemen, this is Vincent from Chicago.
Hey, Vincent, good to hear from Chicago. What's in your mind?
Yeah, just real quickly, it's not why I called in, but just to piggyback off your point about Dolph Ziggler, Jason from Australia once said that with a name like Dolph Ziggler, you were never meant to be a serious main event contender. And he was saying that kind of tongue-in-cheek, but I do think there's some truth to that. Like, you know, just that name just doesn't scream main event to me. But that's not why I called in. I called in about Kofi. I thought the Kofi-Samoa Joe segment was the highlight of the night. And Kofi Kingston, WWE has a tendency to make very bland and dumb baby faces. And Kofi here was very, very smart. He knocked it out the park. He clearly saw Samoa Joe was trying to play psychological mind games with him, you know, trying to create a wedge between him and the New Day. trying to create, you know, trying to bring up his family, his family moment at WrestleMania. He brought the kids into the ring, and Kofi each time put on a smile, and he threw those verbal jabs right back at Samoa Joe. The line about you know you're too big to play hide and seek, that I got a huge pop out of that. And
your ass is too big to play hide and seek. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And honestly, it was very reminiscent of The Rock, because The Rock, many times when he was a babyface, he would get verbal jabs from the heels, trying to play psychological mind games with them, and he threw those jabs back at them, doing a little humor, and you know, so Kofi, I thought Kofi really knocked it out the park. Samoa Joe was good too, but Kofi really knocked it out the park tonight.
Jason, what do you think? Do you agree that was the segment of the night?
Yeah, I mean, I think of all the segments on the show, that was the one that I thought was the most compelling. And I actually thought it was more compelling because of Joe, more so than Kofi. I mean, I like the end part, you know, where he flipped the bird, and they so badly tried to not get that on camera, except until the very end, which I thought was kind of funny. Joe in those kinds of segments, to me, always knocks it out of the park. That is his strong suit. Joe is probably the most believable talker that they have on the entire roster. So I enjoyed that segment a lot. And as far as Kofi, I mean, forgetting tonight even for a second, I have to commend them, because I think they've done a tremendous job of putting in the effort to try to make him seem like a more legitimate champion. There's a lot of people out there who still don't look at Kofi Kingston as being a legitimate world champion. And given how he's been positioned for so many years, that's a valid opinion to have, but it's not for lack of trying. I mean, look at what they've done with him over the last several weeks. You know, they had him beat Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania, and since then, he's beaten a lot of people on TV. He's beaten a lot of people on pay-per-view. They have done as good of a job, I think, as they can do to try to convince people that this guy belongs, sort of hanging with the big boys. And I thought what they did at the end of the segment was a lot of fun, and it was easily the best thing on the entire show.
Yeah, I liked it too. I thought there were good lines delivered back and forth. Joe is tremendous, and Joe's one of the people who I wish Paul Heyman had full and exclusive use of Joe, because I think Paul could get the most out of Joe at this point in Joe's career. But yeah, Kofi, I thought represented himself really well. And I think it's an astute observation, Vincent, that was the segment of the night. I think it was too. Anything else, Vincent, real quick?
Yes, real quick. So Jason Solomon, you on your most recent show, you mentioned how you hate Kofi Kingston throwing pancakes to the ring. And I agree with you. It was cute at first. It's become cringeworthy now. But let me push back on it. You know, LeBron James used to come to the scorer's table before, you know, pregame. He would wipe his hands in the powder and spray it up in the air, you know, for the fans. And, you know, there's all sorts of, sports pregame rituals. Ozzie Smith, he would come onto the field and start doing backflips. Isn't that kind of what Kofi's doing, the pancake throwing to the ring, just kind of his pre-match ritual? As stupid as it is, it kind of is sports-like in a way. Agree or disagree?
Well, I mean, the thing about the most recent show, what I was specifically singling out the fact that he came out smiling and throwing pancakes into the crowd the night after Samoa Joe viciously attacked him on Raw.
Yeah.
So Joe attacked him from behind.
Yeah.
He gave him, I think, a uranage on the stage, and then he choked him out. And my whole thing is, when you're coming off what was really a heavy angle, I think they even kind of faded out the commercial after that. It was kind of like one of these serious beatdown type angles. I'm a big believer in, when you're coming off something like that, you don't come out all smiles the next night. Forget the pancake thing. He came out as if nothing had ever happened. And that to me was the biggest issue I had with it. When you get beaten down and embarrassed like that, you don't come out with a smile on your face the next night. So that, you know, in my defense, was my whole issue with what they did this week. It had less to do with the pancakes and more to do with just how happy he was and how it seemed like they were marginalizing what was a pretty good angle the night before on Raw.
I give them credit for the follow-up to the Braun Strowman-Bobby Lashley angle, both during Raw last night and then on SmackDown tonight, with wrestlers referencing it, the announcers going back to it a couple of times, almost to the point of overkill, but I like it. I like that when you do something big, that they're getting the most out of it they can. And you're absolutely right. Tossing pancakes out doesn't feel at all like the mood you would be in after the beatdown that he received. Also, by the way, Kevin Garnett's the one who did the talcum powder thing at the beginning. And I think LeBron James took that from KG. I don't think that was something. And maybe someone did it before KG, but KG did it for years. And it was hilarious because he'd always slap the talcum powder and everybody in the front row in media had to like cover their mouths and started coughing and all that. And it was just a fun ritual with the Timberwolves for many, many
years. It's like
Wade,
Gallagher.
You're always representing Minnesota.
I'm trying to, yes. And Jason's always representing Gallagher. What's that, Jason?
Well, I was saying it kind of reminds me of Gallagher with a watermelon. You know, he used to smash it. You have to put the plastic over you in the first few rows.
yes. Good reference. YouTube it, kids, as people say.
Yes.
All right, cool. Vincent, any closing words from you?
No. Thank you. Thank you very much. Get to the other callers.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks. All right, cool. We'll go to 801 next and then 31. So, by the way, if you're listening to the caller portion, but you can't call in or don't want to, but you want to contribute to the show, reacting to SmackDown or what we're saying here about SmackDown with callers, the email address is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, 801, you are up next. And then, as I said, 317 on deck. Go ahead, 801, state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Derek from Utah.
Hey, Derek, good to hear from you again. What did you think of SmackDown?
I thought it was a decent show, kind of running in place, but they did have some developments. Some of my takeaways from the show was some good individual performances on the mic. I thought Kevin Owens at the top of the show was fantastic. I thought Joe and Kofi both represented themselves well. But we saw a greater array of talent tonight, whether it be via backstage or they seem to go through the matches a little bit quicker, but we saw a bigger array of SmackDown talent. I appreciate the fact that they're owning their history a lot better than they've done in the past, whether that be Shane McMahon's loss a few years ago to The Undertaker, or Joe's loss to Ricochet last month, or just the angle that they did last night. I think it shows respect for your fans that you acknowledge that they watch and pay attention to your show, and you should award them for that, because I think all wrestling fans, we take pride in the fact that we remember memorable segments and memorable matches. And then kind of my question or perception check to you guys was, I thought compared to the last 3 weeks where the decree has been laid down that we can't watch wrestling during commercial breaks or we won't have wrestling during commercial breaks, I thought the matches were a lot better paced tonight. It seems even the matches that only went 3 minutes or 5 minutes, there was an urgency in the performances. We weren't spending that 3 to 5 minutes in holds. The wrestlers were wrestling and trying to, for lack of a better term, get their stuff in with the time that was allocated. So I thought that was a lot better. And I just kind of wonder if you guys saw the same.
Jason, I'm curious if you can respond to Derek specifically, and then in particular, the creative ways that they are finding to stop matches and reset and restart them after the break. Your thoughts on that pattern and tonight's versions of it?
Yeah, I would agree that it felt better paced than Raw. I am absolutely against this idea of doing 2 out of 3 falls matches every week. The good thing is we didn't get any of them tonight. So I applaud them for that. They found other ways to sort of get around that. But it seems like the last couple of weeks, we've had this overload of 2 out of 3 falls matches and false finishes after a minute, and then the matches restarted. To me, that's not sustainable. You know, that might be good for a few weeks, but this new edict clearly that Vince McMahon has come up with is not going to last. I don't see how it can. And so I think in theory it's a great idea. You don't want to miss half the match to a commercial break, but then in practice what we're seeing is that it's just not practical. And so I thought, you know, to the caller's point, it seemed like the pacing was better tonight, but I just don't think long-term that this new edict is going to be sustainable. I just don't see how it works.
And since when do wrestlers brawling at ringside lead to the match being stopped and then a bell ringing to restart it? It feels so contrived. Like, there's these things that never happened before that are suddenly happening, not every once in a while, but every show, multiple times. And I just don't like that in my continuum of pro wrestling conventions. This is unconventional. It's out of nowhere. It's without explanation. And it makes no sense. It's Superman suddenly casting webs out of his fingers. It's like, that's not a part of Superman. And part of wrestling matches is not all the reasons they're finding to avoid action taking place during commercials. And it magically doesn't happen during the matches where they go to split screen. It's crazy. What a coincidence.
Yeah, and there was a certain way they used to do it many years ago in the early years of Raw. They would take commercial breaks during the middle of matches, but there's just something about the way they throw it to a break these days that's very predictable.
Yeah,
I can hear Michael Cole in my head talking about Raw rolling on like some kind of train, like a bullet train.
Yep.
If they could just reformat the show, and maybe Heyman and Bischoff can have some influence in this way, maybe. But if they can just sort of reformat the show in a way where it's not as predictable, you know, when they cut to a commercial break. I can remember days where Jim Ross or Vince McMahon, there would be a sense of urgency. There'd be a hot match going on, and they would be really excited. And they would say, you know, stay with us. Don't change the channel. Don't go away.
We'll keep the cameras rolling.
Cameras rolling, exactly. So I think there's a way to do it. There's an air of just sameness and predictability, and it's just very formulaic. I think that, to me, is the bigger issue. It's not taking a commercial break in the middle of a match. It's just coming up with a better way to either throw it to a break, or if they can work with USA and maybe just, you know, sort of space them out a little bit better. I don't think it's an issue of you cannot take a commercial break in the middle of a match. Again, I just don't see how that's sustainable. I don't see how this can go on for much longer.
I agree. Yeah, I thought it was unsustainable, too. I am glad that we didn't hear the words reset and restart. I'm glad we didn't hear first fall or second fall opportunity, third fall opportunity, like I made fun of last week from Phillips. That was just ridiculous. All right. Thank you, Derek. Moving on here. 317 up now and then 816 on deck. 317, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Evan from Indianapolis.
Evan from Indy. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Do people from Indianapolis mind being called Indy? I mean, I assume that's okay.
No, definitely. Love it.
Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah, so about the show, it was boring to me, to be honest. I just kind of sat back and took it all in, and I'm so tired of all recaps, man. Like, that just – so few people watch the product. How come they can't get this stuff online? You know what I mean? Like, the recaps of everything that happened the previous night, it just feels like it really drags things out, and I don't know. Not really interesting, but
it did not feel inspired. The wrestlers I felt were inspired in their roles. Like, I don't think it was anybody dogged it. I just think the content of the show, the format, it felt like the fourth and fifth hour of Raw when the writers were a little more tired and there weren't a lot of new ideas. Granted, if Bischoff does make changes eventually, it's not a big deal. It didn't happen in some massive overhaul in week one. Nitro wasn't born in a day. And to just go and make massive changes that might fall apart or be poorly developed out of the gate doesn't make sense. You know, this is if he's moving and this is long term, it's fine. Then it's okay to kind of phone it in on the eve of a holiday week here and save it for a week or two down the line after Extreme Rules to make big changes. But this did feel, you know, like a maintenance show for the most part, other than, you know, I mean, I don't know. Maintenance show takes on a different meaning now. I mean, we saw a little advancement with Nikki Cross and or the continuation of the dynamic with her and Bayley and Alexa. And like we talked about Kevin Owens, and we had a nice angle with Joe and Kofi. I mean, it's not like nothing happened. And the tag team title situation got turned into a triple threat. So there were developments, but it's close to a maintenance show. It's about as close to a maintenance show as you get still.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy we didn't have like a Independence Day cookout where somebody's getting a bowl of macaroni poured on their head or anything. But, you know, do you think it's still like they were overexposing the New Day. They had three segments and a match last night. And, you know, this is 3 weeks in a row that I've tuned into SmackDown looking for some type of development of a Finn Balor Intercontinental Championship reign. And I've gotten nothing of that. And it's just, it's frustrating when I feel like some of the wrestlers that maybe I don't care for or I'm tired of are getting filled in with all this recap of all, and I'm like, where are the things I want to see that they feel like they could potentially do very well? I like the Kevin Owens thing. I feel like that was probably the major point of the night, is him kind of dogging on Shane and Drew and then stunning Dolph at the end. I mean, that was pretty cool development. So there were good things that happened, like you said, but I don't know, just overall, just kind of, you know, just ho-hum through the night, I guess.
Yeah, and if I can chime in, I mean, that's a great point that you make. You know, we had the tease last week, that little backstage segment, that little interaction between Finn Balor and Shinsuke Nakamura. Neither man nowhere to be found on the show tonight. It seemed to me like maybe they were building to something for Extreme Rules. The fact that they weren't even on the show tonight at all tells me that maybe not, and maybe we're looking a little farther down the line. I agree. I don't know where Balor was. I don't know where Nakamura was. I was kind of interested in that tease, and they did nothing at all to follow up on it tonight, which I thought was bizarre.
Anything
else, Evan? I loved Zelina Vega. She's awesome. Anytime she jumps in the match, I just think that's so great. But it was so funny because it was like 80 minutes of kind of drawn out development of these stories have been going, maybe spinning their wheels a little bit with the Nikki Cross thing. You know, I don't feel like much happened with that, but it was on the show. And then all of a sudden they hit that like 20 minutes into the second hour, and it was like, we got three matches out of nowhere. Bing, bang, boom. And, you know, I liked Apollo and Andrade. That was good. And I liked the women's match as well. Ember Moon gets a win. That's great. But it was just like, I don't know. And like you said, I don't expect Bischoff to just change things overnight. But I can't think that he had much to do with this in terms of, like, a long-term play out or some type of new system or anything like that for the show.
I think we got to just be patient and get past Extreme Rules. I mean, there's, you know, Roman Reigns, he's in a big match at Extreme Rules. He's still no showing his new show. You know, if it's a medical thing where they just think he needs to be home more often and that's what's going on, then great. I think one of the, or if it's strictly just to not overexpose him, I'm fine with that too, whatever it is. But eventually,
well,
they've got to get some star power back on this show. You need Balor, Nakamura, Reigns, and who's the name that I was just thinking of and just left? Oh, Randy Orton. You know, you've got to have the top stars on the show, or it's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. With all due respect to Kofi and KO and Nikki and Daniel Bryan, I mean, there needs to be more depth, and I don't think every big star should be on every show, but it's starting to feel like they're pushing it. Yeah, Jason.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, and that's the worst thing, I think, for SmackDown right now. I used to look, even just a few months ago, at SmackDown as something of a refuge to Monday Night Raw. There was a distinction between the two shows, and I was generally enjoying SmackDown more. And the biggest issue I have is that now SmackDown just feels like Raw Lite or Raw Junior.
Or the fourth and fifth hour.
Right. Fourth hour of Raw, you know, just a different color. And I think that that's awful. The Roman Reigns thing is just completely puzzling to me. You know, they move him onto a different brand. He always appears on Raw and never appears on his home show. If that's the case, then just put him on Raw. You know, it's almost insulting to the audience to promote this whole, you know, biggest acquisition in SmackDown history, and they move him over. And it was all, it kind of reminds me many years ago of when they moved or teased that they were moving Triple H over to SmackDown. And that shocked a lot of people. And as it turned out, of course, he ended up not going to SmackDown because, of course, they weren't going to do that. I think a lot of people probably have the same feeling about Roman Reigns. You know, they're going to move him to SmackDown, but he really is still going to be a Raw guy. And so they've got to do something to correct that. The other thing I just want to point out is in the first hour of the show tonight, we had two different talk show segments within hour one. I think maybe we had one match. That is not good. You know, they've got to do a better job of spacing. And we had actually more than two talking segments, but to have two talk shows. We had the Kevin Owens show at the beginning, and then we had the Moment of Bliss with Nikki Cross, which was to build to a match with her and Bayley. But to do two of those segments within an hour, I think is a bit much.
Okay. So, Evan, anything else you want to add?
I think, you know, them, just the Fox deal is always something that, you know, I like to keep in my mind just in terms of like them, you know, building up to that amazing moment where everything's going to change pretty dramatically. And I thought the Roman Reigns transfer was part of that, but I think you nailed it. Like, we just get past Extreme Rules and just see how they build towards SummerSlam, because they got to get some steam going big time.
Yeah, no, I agree. I had a follow-up for you, Jason, on something you just said, and it slipped my mind. So it'll come back to me. So we'll take another call, but I'll try to remember what that was. More of a kind of a big picture question about SmackDown. But we'll go to 816 next, and then 516 is on deck. 816, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Brandon from Kansas City, Missouri.
Hey, Brandon, thanks for calling. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, just watching, got the chance to watch Raw, and then haven't really got a chance to watch SmackDown because I work late, but kind of reading up on what happened on SmackDown, kind of wondering what's going on with Bray Wyatt. Haven't seen him or haven't really seen his Fiends this week.
I did not see any puppets in the background. Did I miss any, Jason? Have you seen them last night or tonight?
No, I mean, I was looking, too. I was looking to see if maybe I'd see a Ramblin' Rabbit pop up in the background or something. And unless I missed it, I didn't see any of it tonight. So, but I would suspect that because we haven't gotten any new Firefly Funhouse segments in the last, I think, 2 weeks, we're getting pretty close. I guess the question is, do they hold off until the pay-per-view? Do they hold off until SummerSlam? It's just a matter of, I think, which week, because it seems like any week now. I mean, I love the Funhouse segments, but at some point you've got to pull the trigger and do something here. I think we're getting pretty close.
Yeah. Yep. Brandon, anything else you want to ask?
Yeah, because I noticed nobody said anything about SmackDown last week with the puppets. They did show the other two puppets on there last week with the pig and the rabbit with the girls in the background. But I don't know. There was a tweet that he put out just maybe about 45 minutes to an hour ago talking about John Cena, dance with John Cena or something like that. Do you think that may be a coming feud for him and maybe bringing John Cena back into the fold as well to bring up the ratings?
I don't know if that would bring up the ratings. Maybe. I mean, I don't know. But, Jason, what do you think is in store for Bray Wyatt's new character when he finally debuts? Do you have a likely top one or two ideas of where they're going to go with this?
As far as where they're actually going to go, I have no idea. The Cena thing, I think that's just a red herring. I mean, he's tweeted everybody. He's tweeted Chris Jericho. He's tweeted The Rock. I don't really think that him tweeting John Cena is a sign of anything, although it wouldn't be such a horrible idea to try to get Cena maybe on that first Fox show. As far as who he may go after at first, I'm a big believer, and look, we haven't seen the character in the flesh yet in the ring and the new costume and the mask and everything. But they've got something with Bray Wyatt, and they've done him dirty in the past. I don't want to see that happen again. I think that there's a lot of buzz around him. I think there's a lot of goodwill that they've built up with these segments. And I think that he should be, if not right away, very soon after, frankly, involved in a championship feud. Now, whether that's with Kofi on SmackDown and maybe Bray, you know, sort of evil Bray is the one to take the title away from him, or if they want to maybe pair him off with Seth Rollins, I could see them building something with him and Bray for the championship at SummerSlam. To me, that would be a big match for SummerSlam. You know, slotting him with The Miz or slotting him with Elias or someone sort of lower down on the card, to me, would be a disappointment. I am hoping for something along the lines of a big re-debut, not unlike what we saw with Kane many years ago and some of these big names, because I think he can be at that level, and it may just be a case where the fans dictate whether or not he's a heel or a babyface, but you know, he's got a lot of buzz around him. Run with it. I think he can be a top guy, and I hope when he finally shows up, whether it is Rollins or Kofi or somebody else, he is in the upper echelon of that card on either show.
I remember my question for you also earlier, which is it sustainable or advisable even to have the wild card rule in effect with Heyman running Raw and Bischoff running SmackDown? You know, and this had to do with the caller mentioning, you know, the New Day being on both shows, and you talked about there's so many wrestlers who are SmackDown wrestlers who aren't on SmackDown, and then we're seeing some of the same wrestlers on both Raw and SmackDown to where I don't even know who's on what brand, because we only had 1 week of the Superstar Shakeup for it to sink in. I got to check my roster notes to figure it out.
Yeah.
It seems like after Extreme Rules, it would make sense to have an edict that there is no more wild card rule. And what brand you're on, you're on. If Heyman and Bischoff want to trade, if Heyman's a huge fan of Shelton Benjamin, for instance, just to grab a name that was on TV. But Bischoff thinks that he could do wonders with Mojo Rawley because he reminds him of Mongo, whatever. I don't know. Put him on color commentary, by the way. That would be a good statement for Bischoff to make. Put Mongo Rawley on commentary. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? They're like, let them put their brand on it. Okay, sorry. I shouldn't do that. And they make some trades. I love it. You're just...
Thank God we don't have executive director Wade Keller on Monday Night Raw.
I am pitching ideas I think Bischoff might go for. That is not on my top 100 list. But seriously, like, I think they should have some sort of clear roster delineation after Extreme Rules. And it was interesting. They had that graphic that went out to sell tickets in San Antonio with Bischoff's face on it. I think it was legit, but they didn't follow up on it. Apparently it wasn't supposed to go out, and it did. And they really just were low-key about both Heyman and Bischoff this week. So to me, I think a healthy guess would be they're saving it until the week after Extreme Rules.
Yeah, and maybe that's one of the things that Heyman and Bischoff can help tamp down on once they're kind of fully engaged in their new roles. You can't be putting advertising out like that, kind of leading people to believe that Bischoff or Heyman are going to be – and Heyman technically was on Raw, but you can't be doing that. So maybe they'll be able to help out. Maybe one hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing. To go to your original point, no, it is not sustainable. The wild card rule makes no sense. If these guys are going to be given full autonomy, and I mean, I remember the story of Bill Watts back in, you know, when Vince hired him and brought him in 95, and he thought he was going to have full autonomy, and of course it didn't work out that way. So just because they're supposed to doesn't mean they will. But if their sole responsibility is going to be their own brand, then the wild card rule doesn't work. You cannot mix and match stars from one brand to the next, because it just doesn't, if that is the case here, it doesn't work. So no, I don't think that's going to work. I'm perfectly fine if they want to have Bischoff and Heyman show up on television one week, once they're, you know, in full effect, and sort of announce that the wild card rule is hereby rescinded, or make some kind of announcement that lets people know that that's not the way it's going to be anymore, provided that we don't see them on television every week. You know, I heard Paul Heyman recently talk about how played out the whole general manager concept is, for example. I agree 100%. But I don't think there's any harm in having them on day one show up and sort of say, hey, you know, this is – I'm running the show now. This is the way things are going to be, and sort of take a very Jack Tunney-esque position where they only show up every now and then when needed. But, yeah, this wild card rule, you know, Vince is sort of 0-for-2. Of late with these edicts of his, between this and the no wrestling during commercial breaks, it just doesn't work. And the wild card rule in particular, if they're going to solely focus on their own brand, it does not work. And the wild card rule should have been abandoned weeks ago. And so I am all in favor of getting rid of it, because you have people like Buddy Murphy. You know, there's a name. He was drafted to SmackDown. Where's he been? You know, there's a lot of guys who are being left out in the cold. Forget Rusev and all of them. Who are really being shortchanged. And so I think the sooner they get rid of it and abandon it, the better off we'll be.
Well, what is your hunch or belief that when it comes to whether this move with Heyman and Bischoff is a cosmetic Band-Aid for Vince McMahon to buy himself time while ratings are down, to disconnect himself from responsibility if it doesn't work out, or to consider himself a genius for bringing back these one-time competitors to help freshen up the shows and revive ratings? It's sort of a no-lose situation for Vince, as long as, you know, there's no, like, if the rating sinks below 1.2, the contracts are invalidated. Well, then it would be very dumb, you know, to take some chances. Well, I don't know. Maybe that'd be all the more reason to take some new chances. I guess you could argue that either way. But is this just cosmetic and PR and getting himself a safety net so that he can say, I'm back come October? Or do you think this is genuinely Vince kind of going, yeah, maybe I – in so many words, maybe I am losing touch a little bit or a little burned out, and it would be good to get another layer of vision and ideas in here from people from the 90s who were, without question, both Bischoff and Heyman visionaries with the ability to look at something, and especially with Bischoff, come up with big concept and big picture ideas, and with Heyman, bring out the best in wrestlers who don't necessarily have aren't being utilized to their best. I mean, the whole ECW roster was made up of them.
Yeah, I can't sit here and tell you what's going through Vince McMahon's head. And you've talked to him before. You used to have conversations on a regular basis with him, and I bet you can't even tell for sure what's going through this guy's head these days. So it's impossible to know for sure. I don't think he's sitting there saying, boy, you know, I'm out of touch and I better bring some other people in. I don't think he thinks he is out of touch, but I do think he sees that there's problems. And I would hope that he recognizes, especially going into this billion-dollar deal they made with Fox, we've got to make some changes here because things aren't going the way that I would hope that, you know, they would be going. So I'd like to think that he's genuine in wanting to give this a chance to work. And, you know, Heyman sitting there and sort of shadowing him on Monday, Bischoff uprooting his life, it sounds like, and moving to Connecticut, at least part-time, to really throw himself into this. I certainly hope that Vince is taking this seriously and it's not just a cosmetic thing. But again, I think back to the Bill Watts thing from 95 when, you know, if you, and you know the story better than I would, but you know, Watts came to WWF and thought that he was going to have power as far as the direction of the company. And he was going to build, I think the story is that he was going to build behind Bret Hart as his world champion. And Vince, who had told him that he would have the power and the autonomy to sort of make whatever decisions he felt were necessary, felt differently. And he thought Shawn Michaels was the guy to build around his champion. And then guess what? The Cowboy was gone shortly thereafter. And that was over 20 years ago. But that's sort of the mentality. That's the past examples we have to go on. It doesn't seem to me like Vince plays well generally with others. And Bischoff, the whole Bischoff thing is weird to me. And I'd be curious if you feel the same way. And you talked to Bischoff 10 years ago, and I saw, you know, from that interview you did where Bischoff said, you'll never see me in this kind of role. So it's amazing how kind of things change over time. But it just seems to me Bischoff, for all of the ideas he did have with WCW, and I look at it and I give him a lot of credit. He got 2 hours on Monday nights. He sort of borrowed from the ECW concept, bringing in guys like Mysterio and Jericho, and he had something special in the Cruiserweights, and it was something very different at the time. So he's had, and of course the NWO, but he's had some ideas, but it's been 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, creatively speaking, I wasn't exactly impressed by his stint in TNA, and so it's been 20 years since Bischoff has really been kind of in the thick of it and had any sort of creative successes. It's to use the word we were just using, it's a wild card. We don't know what to expect. It could be oil and water with him. Can you picture him and Gorilla sitting next to Vince every single week? I mean, I think it's way more likely that Bischoff up and quits as opposed to Vince getting rid of him.
I don't know about that. I mean, or Vince driving him to quit. I just wonder about Fox executives going, wait, you're giving us this. We paid that much money for Vince McMahon's Midas touch, and you've lost your Midas touch since you put the ink on the contract, and now you're giving it to a guy who you drove out of business and has been podcasting about things he did 20 years ago. Like, that's how you're repaying us for this massive amount of money? I mean, I'm sure there's some people kind of looking at this going, what is going on here? I'm curious if Vince made this move on a whim and did not consult the Fox people about handing over, you know, handing the keys to drive the SmackDown vehicle for at least 3 months, perhaps, before Fox kicks in and Fox saying, wait a second, do we not have a say-so in this? Maybe you should check with us. And maybe they did, and maybe there's somebody there who loves Bischoff. I mean, that I don't know, but I wonder if Fox people aren't like, wait, you signed this contract and now you're just handing the keys to somebody else? We paid for you. Fixing yourself. Of course, Vince will say, I still have, you know, they have to still run everything through me. And then you get to kind of the Bill Watts situation that you brought up, which is, well, where is Vince willing to listen to new ideas and where isn't he? But that said, there is there's a way to blend both. Vince can say, these are the guys who I want on top, and these are the big matches that I think we need to have for SummerSlam and for the first few SmackDowns in October, and here's what I'm eyeing for WrestleMania. If you can talk me out of it, great. If you think it's fine and you can work with it, I appreciate it. And now do what you can to make the show look fresh and be presented with a fresh veneer and try to get something more out of the undercard that, frankly, I'm too busy or bored to bother with. And that's fine, too. You know, if Bischoff is there to kind of work with the writing team to take a little bit off of Vince's plate and try to get to know the wrestlers and work with them better. I mean, there's a lot of ways that they can work together without it having to be just, you know, people giving Vince heat for not letting Bischoff just completely take control. The question is, is it more like Kevin Owens and Ziggler tonight to bring it back? Are they going to pretend they're going to work together and then there's going to be a super kick that blindsides one of them and it's going to turn into a big brawl? And I could see that with Bischoff and Vince. The counter to that is Bischoff could use the money, use the job. I mean, I think Bischoff sees this as an opportunity, and it's not the brash guy in his early 40s. I think this is a guy who's looking for some financial security and to write a new chapter in his career with reverence for what Vince McMahon has accomplished since they were battling each other. So there's a lot of ways to look at this. I mean, head scratcher to hire Bischoff in some ways, but it's fascinating from a historical standpoint.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add to that, Jason?
No, I would agree. I mean, to me, it's almost more fascinating. The behind the scenes stuff to me is much more fascinating than what we're seeing on television, because I'm more curious than anything else to see how this plays out with Bischoff. Like 6 months from now, are we going to be having a conversation about how great SmackDown is under the vision of Eric Bischoff, or is Eric Bischoff going to be long gone at that point? That's sort of the big question mark to me. And my sense of it is that Paul Heyman is very much in tune as far as the Raw brand is concerned with what's going on, because he's been there, if not every week. He's been behind the scenes apparently on most weeks. And I'm sure he had a lot of input as far as Brock Lesnar stuff and all that. Eric Bischoff, I don't get the sense that he's very up on the current product. And it seems to me like they're going to have to give him, and he's probably in the middle right now of a crash course in, okay, here are the top acts on SmackDown, and here's what's been going on with the ongoing storylines. And is he going to be able to kind of put that all together very quickly? I mean, you made the comment a little while ago. He's not known to be the most creative mind. He's great in a lot of other ways, and maybe that had something to do with why Vince wanted him on SmackDown and not Heyman. It's sort of a role reversal from their on-screen characters back in the day. Bischoff was the GM of Raw. Heyman was the GM of SmackDown. And now the roles are reversed, but Bischoff has experience working with television executives. You know, he spent a lot of years since WCW. I think he had a production company. Maybe he still does. He's pitched TV shows to different networks and cable stations and stuff. So maybe he's got a leg up there, and that's why they said, hey, you know, let's kind of have him on the Fox side of things. I don't know how if he'll be in direct communication with Fox executives or what his role will be in that respect. But I wouldn't discount the possibility that had a lot to do with putting him on the SmackDown brand.
Yeah, I think so too. Heyman has definitely built a rapport with wrestlers, and they're very happy to have him there, and they respect him. Heyman is so good work. It goes back to early Sting, where the best mic work from Sting, and that was his weak spot all along, was when Heyman worked with him directly. And Heyman did wonderful things, incredible things with the misfits that he built ECW around. And we could go on and on. I mean, Heyman has been somebody who has produced and worked with wrestlers and gotten their best promos out of them. And people love his enthusiasm and knowledge and passion. With Bischoff, there's a challenge. He's not someone that's going to walk in and know Kevin Owens' history. So, you know, to the degree that even close, or pick anybody on the roster, really. Now, there's a benefit to that, because he can walk in the door as sort of it's like a kid going to a new school where he gets to, or, you know, when you go to college and you kind of go, all right, all my friends knew me as that version of myself, but I kind of want not to reinvent myself, but have a fresh start and not have that baggage and not have those preconceptions. And you kind of get a fresh, people look at you through fresh eyes. Bischoff can do that with a SmackDown roster. He can show up and say, I don't know what's gone on storyline-wise in great depth the last 5, 6, 7 years, but I'm going to give everybody a fresh look. And if you've been underutilized, I might be able to utilize you to your potential without feeling like I'm held back by that have been held against you, that for me, the slate is clean because I didn't even see them happen. That's a generous read on the situation. If I'm Bischoff watching SmackDown last a weekend to try to catch up, so he doesn't just seem completely out of it. It's fascinating. I mean, they're both fascinating people. I've known Eric since the late 80s when he was in the AWA at those ESPN TV tapings, and heck, he and I went to the same karate school. He brags about beating up my karate instructor. He left shortly before I started taking classes there, and when I told him who my teacher was, Julian Derschmidt, Eric goes, oh yeah, I used to beat him up on sparring class all the time. A classic Eric response. So I've known him forever, and this is really interesting to see this next chapter. And I have known Paul forever too. In fact, around the same time in the AWA in the late 80s. So yeah, this is a super cool story to follow, and they're such two very different people for the reasons you pointed out, Jason. That I'm curious to see where this goes. Okay, I'm gonna go back to callers. We'll take a couple more calls and then move on. We'll go to 516 and then 786. 516, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, it's JJ from Long Island. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling, JJ.
Piggybacking off what you said about Eric Bischoff, I mean, if you look at his line of work, I mean, look at 2019, the company was hot as all heck, and then he came in, and then if you look at when he left in, like, 2014, it was garbage. He basically did the same thing when he came back into WCW, and, you know, he basically caught lightning in the bottle, in my opinion, one time with the NWO, and
JJ,
really since then,
JJ?
Did nothing. Yeah.
JJ?
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. Your phone went out, so I'm just going to from the start.
Sorry.
And if you're in a bat, if you can move to a better spot, too.
Yeah, that better? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, okay. You've been better since I interrupted.
Okay, cool. Sorry, yeah. So, I mean, in my opinion, you know, Eric Bischoff, when he started in, took over in TNA around 2010 and whatever, somewhere down there, and when he left, that company was terrible. Before he got there, it was much better. In 1999, when he came back into WCW, it was okay going down tubes. And when he got there, he made it worse. I mean, in my opinion, he basically caught lightning in a bottle one time with the NWO. And besides that, like, he really does not have a good track record. I mean, Paul Heyman has a much better track record. So in my opinion, this is going to be a disaster. He's been living in the hills of Wyoming for, you know, God knows how long. And if you listen to his podcast, which I do sometimes, the guy is really out of touch. I mean, some of his ideas and things like that, I really feel like he's stuck in, you know, the 90s at best. And he really doesn't really have much of business. What did you say?
We're losing you again, but I'll take what you said.
We
lost you again at the tail end there, but that's okay. Locate a little bit to get a better signal while Jason responds. Your thoughts on what JJ had to say there, Jason?
Yeah, it kind of goes to the point that I was trying to make before, which is that he hasn't been involved in the business in so long, I guess going back to the TNA days, but he's been so removed from it. I look at it both ways. I think, one, it could be a negative because he has been removed and he isn't familiar with a lot of the faces and the characters. But that could be a good thing, too, because, frankly, I think SmackDown has been largely a bore for a while now, which it pains me to say that because I said before it was a refuge from Raw for so long. It was like, well, Raw stunk out the joint this week, but at least we have SmackDown to look forward to. It's been months since I really could say that. So maybe somebody like Bischoff coming in, who is not familiar with all of the ongoing storylines that have been so boring, coming in with a fresh pair of eyes, who says, "Look, I don't really know what's been going on here, but you know, the hell with it. We're sort of gonna blow, not have a full reset, but we're gonna blow things up and we're gonna start from scratch and we're gonna build maybe around some new people and we're gonna pretend like, you know, what's been going on for the last 6 months didn't happen." I'm not so sure that's the worst thing in the world either. We're going to find out in short order, you know, what kind of creative force he can really be, because his track record has been spotty at best in the 20 years since WCW went under. You know, again, he had some great ideas and he had some very innovative ideas many, many years ago, but it's sort of a what have you done for me lately. And with Bischoff, it's a clean slate. You could talk about the successes he had with WCW, but he can't live off
all
that
right
anymore.
No, absolutely. I actually think it's my connection that's bad, maybe in addition to JJ's, because you're breaking up on me too, Jason. So, but nevertheless, we'll go back to JJ, see if we can have a good connection with him for some closing thoughts.
Okay. So one other thing. My question is, with SmackDown and moving to Fox, do you think that it's still going to be able to air clips of Raw, like they did this today when they started Raw off with SmackDown off with basically, like, you know, that entire clip from Raw? Would there be a rights kind of issue when SmackDown moves to Cypher Fox? Can they air USA footage, or will they have to just do skills like they do, you know, on pay-per-views and stuff?
Well, they choose to do that with pay-per-views because they want to create a sense of exclusivity for the paid content. That's an internal WWE choice that goes back to the, you know, the pay-per-view era, which is like, if you want to see it, we're going to show you still shots, but boy, you should have paid 50, 60 bucks so you could have watched it in real time. The various NFL Network share footage and highlights of games, that's just going to be, I'm assuming that's not going to be an issue between Fox and USA. That said, Jason, you know, can agree, just agree with me on that if you want to, but I would like to see, and I don't know to what degree Fox and USA are going to want a sense of exclusivity and a strong differentiation between the products. It could turn out, you know, even though Fox and USA both want access to Roman Reigns or both want access to Brock Lesnar, they also might, while insisting on that, want exclusive access to top stars and announcers and the big angles. So I think, you know, we talk about Heyman and Bischoff being fascinating. I'm fascinated by how hands-on or hands-off USA and Fox are come this fall.
Yeah, I don't want any mixing. I mean, you know, you have a brand split. You either commit to it or you abandon it. Right now, we don't have a brand split. You know, they talk about how we have one. It's a brand split in name only. And we were just talking about Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is a SmackDown star who never shows up on SmackDown. It's an insult. So there's an old expression. Well, I won't say it, but basically either, you know, do something or get off the pot. You either want a brand split or you don't. It's very simple. And I kind of hope, whether there's an exclusivity issue, and I don't think there would be, but whether there is or there isn't, I would rather they make no reference to Raw whatsoever. Or if you're going to make reference to something big that happened on Raw the night before, well, I guess it wouldn't be the night before, but earlier in the week, have a little video package. You don't throw it to the announcers who go on for 10 minutes about what happened on Monday Night Raw this week.
Yep.
You don't do that anymore. You want to have Raw and SmackDown as distinct brands. Eric Bischoff, there's video of him when he was overseas in the UK, I think earlier this year or last year, and he was asked his opinion about the brand split. And I thought he made some actually very valid points about how nobody can take it seriously when you have a mixing of the rosters. If you're going to do it, you have to commit to it. I actually liked what I heard from him, and I kind of hope that he can apply that now that he's going to be in a position of power. Corey Graves. Corey Graves is an announcer on Raw. He's an announcer on SmackDown. Get him off of one of the shows. There is no reason for him to be an announcer on both shows if you're trying to give the illusion that they are separate brands. You cannot have it both ways. I feel like they're talking out of both sides of their mouth. You either have a brand split or you don't. It's very simple. And I feel you need an actual split. And maybe 6 months or a year from now, or maybe just once a year at Survivor Series, when they do Raw versus SmackDown, maybe then it'll actually mean something.
Remember when SmackDown announcers would brag about a ratings win or badmouth the competition, and there's a little bit of that going on because Vince, you know, for what, a 3-week period, wanted to have some of that adrenaline rush of Bischoff giving away finishes and being brash on Nitro, and then Raw firing back with billionaire Ted and that kind of thing. But he doesn't stick with this stuff for very long. You know, that's the frustrating part, is there's a shiny new idea, and then the shine wears off after a couple of weeks and the impracticalities of it kick in, and then it just kind of reverts, what's the phrase, reverts to the mean, whatever it is. And he just goes right back to kind of his comfort zone. And so I, you know, when you talk about, you know, sticking with something for a long time, I'd like to see it, and I'd like to see him think it through, think about the pros and cons, and then commit to something and stick with it. I think hopefully there's some outside incentive to do just that come October.
Yeah. And maybe one of the first kind of orders of business for Bischoff when he takes over, maybe he'll come on the air and give away the NXT spoilers, you know, when he comes on SmackDown. I could see him maybe borrowing from some of his own past ideas. But I agree. You need to commit to it. You either have a brand split or you don't.
Yep.
I think a brand split could work. I think there's a lot of logic in it, and getting some of these guys on TV who have been neglected. I mentioned Buddy Murphy a little while ago, Aleister Black, whatever the heck they're doing with him. But you can't have it both ways. And I think Vince McMahon kind of going all in on an idea and then 2 weeks later abandoning ship, that's why people can't get into the product anymore, because things change so often, and there is no commitment. You know, there's no commitment here. And people are like, well, who cares? You know, things are going to change in 2 weeks anyway, so why should I bother kind of investing my time in this? And that's a big problem. I think that has a lot to do with them chasing away a lot of their audience. So if they're bringing in Bischoff and Heyman, I hope personally that this is a commitment that Vince is willing to make. It's not a PR move. It's not a cosmetic move. Now is the time to make this move. They've chased off a lot of their audience. Half the buildings are tarped off half the time. I don't want to sound the alarm bells. I mean, they're still making a lot of money. But as a fan, I'm ready for real change, not phony change for 2 weeks. So I hope he's serious about this, and I hope these two are given the level of autonomy they need to really make some changes.
All right, we'll go to one last call, and then we'll get to our on-site correspondent from San Antonio. Currently watching, I think, the second of two dark matches right now. They go through with both of them. He just emailed and said they're watching the first of two a few minutes ago. 786, you are the last caller of the day. State your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, it's Chewy from Pembroke Park, Florida.
Hey, Chewy, good to hear from you. What's on your mind about SmackDown?
Mostly it's Drew McIntyre. Like, we've all seen or know that he can be your top belt holder in various promotions. But now I'm to the point where, like, I want him to come from NXT very quickly because he looks the part, he sounds the part, his moveset decent. And now I'm just to the point where as soon as I hit his music, I'm just like, why is this guy out again? Like, I can't take it with him anymore. And I'm like, have they missed the mark already? Like, is he damaged goods that fast? Because this Shane thing, I don't see how they're supposed to give him the rub, because it's not like Elias is really doing anything, and we're still iffy on the Revival. Like, they took a guy who they could build something around as a top heel and then get a good baby face push out of it later, and I'm just like, yo, dude, you got to go somewhere for a while. You just got to go.
Jason, your thoughts?
Yeah, you mentioned Elias. I never looked at Elias as like a top act. Some people did, I guess. I never saw it, so I think Elias is exactly where he needs to be. As far as McIntyre has main event potential, and McIntyre had something when he was in NXT. He was a babyface. Maybe he's just a better babyface than he is a heel. I think that all of these ills can be cured if the end game here is that he sort of gets fed up with Shane McMahon's shenanigans, and there comes a time, maybe after Extreme Rules or after SummerSlam, where there's a split, and he lays out Shane with about 5 Claymore kicks, which I'm sure would get a great reaction because people are sick of seeing Shane McMahon, and that might be enough to build up goodwill with the crowd, and he can get a good babyface run. Then I think that'll be the real test of what his sort of drawing power is on the main roster with the audience, because as a heel, he's very flat. And when he's playing second fiddle to Shane McMahon, it's no wonder that nobody can get into the guy. I mean, look at it. Look what he's done. Now he's with Shane. Before Shane, he was hanging out with Baron Corbin and Bobby Lashley. It's like poison. So I think they could probably get him on the right path when the time comes, and I hope they're building to a split where he'll turn on Shane, or Shane will just push his button so much that he just says, I've had enough, and lay him out and branch out on his own, because there's real potential there. And I assume The Undertaker must feel the same way if he wants to work with Drew, and we'll see where that goes. So I wouldn't give up on Drew just yet, but yeah, he's been very cold and very flat for a while, and that's a big problem, but I feel like a turn on Shane could set him on the right path.
All right, very good. Anything else, Chewy?
That was just a weird show altogether. But no, that helps me figure out a little bit.
Cool. Awesome. All right. Thanks for calling. We will end the – yeah, you bet. We'll wrap up the caller portion of the show there. But, Jason, before we go to our on-site correspondent and before we cut away, if people enjoyed your analysis tonight but haven't heard – but haven't heard you before, how can they hear you on a more regular basis? Tell them about your show and how to find you.
Sure. The full show is Solid Monster Sounds Off. It drops every Sunday. It's a weekly show talking all pro wrestling, not just WWE, NXT, AEW, Ring of Honor, all kinds of promotions. You can get it on all podcast platforms, including iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio. I've got a YouTube channel by the same name that has a lot of pay-per-view reviews, live streams, and bonus content. So pretty much anywhere, if you just type in Solid Monster Sounds Off, or go to thesolidmonster.com or at Solid Monster on Twitter, those are the top places to find me.
Very cool. All right, we'll be back after this with our on-site correspondent.